Hi, folks. This is Warren Hunt with another episode of the Guitar Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again. This is episode number 69. For those of you new to the Guitar Podcast, I want you to know that when I talk about guitars and amps and pedals and music and all sorts of different guitar-related things, I'm conveying my opinion from my experience and learning over the years. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net and chime in with comments and such on the blog and show notes at theguitarpodcast.net/blog. Follow The Guitar Podcast on Facebook. Last but not least, go to theguitarpodcast.net and sign up for email alerts, where you'll get emails notifying you when a new episode's been released and other timely information regarding The Guitar Podcast. All right, let's get to it. So yeah, today we're back in my car, the mobile podcasting studio for The Guitar Podcast. So anyway, it's a Monday morning. I'm trying to really get revved up for the week. It's kind of tough because it's Monday, right? So anyway, just a little bit of information that's going on with regarding the Guitar Podcast. I want to tell you that be sure and go to YouTube and check out the videos. We'll be doing a lot more videos coming up. Just uploaded one yesterday. Of course, I'm recording this well ahead of time that I actually put this out, but it was Sunday, March 4th. And so I'm really enjoying doing the videos, whether it's me videotaping it or my wife videotaping me doing something, or working with my friend Kyle on a video. I'm at the point where I'm having more. It takes more time to do a video. A short 3-minute video takes more time to do than just an episode of the Guitar Podcast, whether it's the preparation, the recording, editing, production, any of that, you know, post-production. It takes longer, but I'm having so much fun with it, so you're going to see much more of that coming up. Today, I want to talk about, when we're talking about the five essential guitars to have. If you could have, like, I mean, a lot of us can only have, like, one or two guitars tops, and others can have, like, dozens. And some of us guitar hoarders may have 30. But, you know, if we could break it down to five essential guitars, if you could have five essential guitars, we talked about a Les Paul style, a Stratocaster style, a Telecaster style, a jazz box style, like semi hollow body electric, or an acoustic. So I'm going to start it off with the Gibson Les Paul style, SG style guitar, which is basically a mahogany body with or without a maple top. But the biggest thing is that it has two humbuckers, one in the bridge position and one in the neck position, to get a really fat, thick tone without hum. They can give you massive overdrive, massive distortion, depending on what kind of pickup you put in there. Even if you have, like, stock Gibson Shaw pickups, like my 87 Les Paul Custom has, you can get some pretty saturated overdrives that'll get you into that Metallica or speed metal zone, as well as tone it down into your Lynyrd Skynyrd type of a zone. So the thing is, you know, I never really, you know, it's a guitar that's been used by many people, from the guys in Lynyrd Skynyrd, Jimmy Page / Peter Green, Joe Perry, and many, many more. So we're covering a lot of ground from blues-driven rock. Oh, and Joe Bonamassa, which I need to touch on him here coming up, because we'll talk about blues. Just blues. Just that blues tone. Blues. So, you know, that to saturated distortion that you would get from Slash, it's like way over the top, super overdrive, super distortion, you know, in your face melting molten lava rock and roll, as well as what you would hear from Joe Bonamassa, which, if you didn't already know that he was playing a Les Paul, sometimes you may think that he's playing P90s or even single coil pickups. He can get really, really great blues tones. And he's using a Les Paul, for crying out loud, with big fat humbuckers. So you can get a lot of different tones. The thing is, you're not going to absolutely nail any one of the other four varieties of guitars. And so, you know, when you want that specialized, trademarked, patented Les Paul, thick Les Paul tone, then you can really only go one way, and that's with a Les Paul style guitar. Now then, it's proliferated into many other kinds of body shapes and styles and so on. But the core part, that makes it a Les Paul style guitar for me, if you're going away from a Les Paul, is the pickup configuration, having the two humbuckers to get that tone. Now, you may not be, you can take like a Paul Reed Smith, where they can have several different types of bodies and body shapes and so on and so forth, but the key thing is that it's two humbuckers primarily. Of course, they have humbucker and single-single and humbucker, single, humbucker. They have all sorts of different configurations for their pickups, but they're you know, what I still classify them as a Les Paul style guitar. And of course, then you have your hot rod Strats. There are people have put humbuckers in the bridge and neck position on their Strat to get that thicker tone, but they like the contoured shape and feel of their Strat still. So it's like a super Strat, hot rod Strat, or like a hybrid or whatever. So that's where, you know, anytime you see something like that where they have taken a guitar and put humbuckers in the bridge and neck position, it has become that, it's attempting to get to that, or a hybridization of the Les Paul tone. So, say, like my Shredder guitar is a Strat style shape. However, it has two humbuckers, so it's kind of a hybrid super Strat Shredder type of guitar. And that was a big thing in the late 70s and all throughout the 80s, and it's still doing it today. I mean, you can look at all the different kinds of guitars that are out there now, and from Ibanez to Dean to what is that other guitar company's name? Always slips my mind. It's very, very popular, much more popular than Dean. And, well, crap, I'll think of it. Maybe tomorrow, after I've already put this thing out. So yeah, it's a guitar that can get a lot of different tones, but its signature tone is that thick, overdriven tone that, you know, doesn't have any hum and just really fat, really nice. Of course, and from my point of view, and part of the reason why I talk about it first is because it's my desert island guitar kind of a thing. If I could only have one guitar out of my collection, it would be my Les Paul. If I had to sell all the other ones, then that would be it. Of course, I'd be sacrificing an acoustic guitar, which is kind of a big deal. So then I'd have to kind of amend that whole desert island guitar thing and include an acoustic, that you could have one acoustic and one electric. And one amp, right? Right? Come on, I'm making the rules. So anyway, that pretty much covers the Les Paul, in my opinion. You know, it's really tough, though, for me to say one guitar that I would want to have, because I love so many. I love the variety of guitars that are out. The custom-made guitars, the production line guitars, the, you know, just all the different guitars that are out there right now, because, well, I mean, not just the five that are like the core, the main guitars, and then there are just all these others. Because, you know, I can say, yeah, the Les Paul is the one that I would want to stick with, a number one. And when I was young, I wanted just that one guitar that would do it all and everything, and I think many of us think that way. But as I've gotten older and I've learned to embrace the beauty of all the variety of different guitars, the diversity in guitars that are out there, and I really enjoy it, and I love it, and that's why it's just like I have a hard time just selling any of my guitars. And but then and then buying another guitar, because I know that one day I'll be considering wanting to sell it and to get something else, or just to have the cash and in case this gem just appears at this next guitar store or something like that, you know, because then there's that heartbreak of breaking up of you know, it is kind of like that though. It's like, you know, my Les Paul, that relationship is well over 10 years I've had that guitar, and it's a long-term relationship. Like, I'm married to that guitar. And then I have other guitars, and I don't, for the record, folks, I don't name my guitars. I know a lot of people do. I don't. I never have, really. I just, you know, I'd call that one Les, because it's a Les Paul. It's very simple, very easy that way. I don't name them like Jessica or anything like that. You know, I'm not a guy that, I just don't do it. And not that there's anything wrong with it, of course. I mean, a lot of people do. A lot of people name their guitars after women or guys or whatever. I don't care. Or dogs. I'm just not the guy who does it. Time out, folks. There's a wreck ahead, and she's on her phone. Treacherous driving this morning here in Indianapolis. We have black ice all over the place, and I felt on the way in just a little bit ago, I felt my car kind of moving around the road a bit, and got a little more cautious. And, you know, I picked the perfect day to do a mobile podcast while I have one hand on my, holding my phone, recording me blabbing about guitars, and then my, you know, the rest of my concentration trying to keep my car from going in a ditch or anything like that. So anyway, I've lost my train of thought. So yeah, you know, whenever I sell a guitar or whatever, it is kind of like breaking up. It's kind of, you know, you bought the guitar for a reason, right, Lauren? Because, you know, you loved it. You thought it was awesome. It was so super cool. And now, well, maybe it's not so cool anymore. Maybe I want the grass is greener over here or over there or whatever. You know, it's one of those things. It is kind of tough, and I think I've begun to think about that whenever I purchase a guitar, about that end game kind of a scenario, that one day I may wind up selling this guitar, or what could I get a return on my investment that's equal to or greater than what I put into it, or does that even matter? Does that even factor in, or is it one that's like, you know, this is going to be a lifetime one? Although I bought an S74 SG thinking, yeah, this is going to be a lifetime one. Yeah, this is awesome. And yeah, it's gone. So, oh boy, totally irrational. I would love to keep them all. I would love to have them all and keep them all and then just, you know, have a vault of guitars. But my financial situation doesn't merit that, doesn't allow that. So maybe one day, but not right now. Which goes into talking about when I bought that G&L Skyhawk, a 1985 G&L Skyhawk, a week and a half ago, how awesome that thing was. I was like, it is still awesome. And I'm going, this is the best Strat I've played. I mean, it's not even a Strat, but, you know, it is a Leo Fender made guitar. But I just loved the feel, the sound, and everything, and later to come to find out that it has an ash body, probably a three-piece ash body, and it's painted black, and it's awesome, and a rosewood fretboard, which I've always been more of a maple fretboard for Strats, preferred those for Strats, but, you know, something's changing, so I really love it. And so I thought, well, you know, I need to go out there and finish up my Stratocaster relic, my 54 reissue relic, and sell it or whatever, or just part it out and sell it on eBay or Craigslist or whatever. And so then I get out there and I start working on it. I'm going, oh, it's so beautiful. I love this guitar. So you know where I am. I'm right back where I started, right? I've got a bunch of guitars and I don't have I have a replacement for that guitar, but I don't want to replace that guitar. So I think you understand the insanity here, right, folks? Good grief. So, I don't know if this is kind of way off course for what we were talking about initially, but I think you're used to that from me, right? They've got a little bit of adult ADD or guitar ADD or whatever. But that's okay, right? So yeah. Another thing I want to talk about today, I hope I covered things with you were kind of looking for out of why you want a Les Paul. Although the Les Paul is kind of a heavy guitar, it depends on what year you get. If you get a 70s, they can be well over 10 pounds. If you get something in the 80s, late 80s, well, like mine, it's been weight relieved with holes drilled in the mahogany body before they put the maple cap on top of it to try to keep it around 9 pounds or less. Now, the big thing about the 58s and 59s and the old Gibson Les Pauls, I think the wood was aged a lot more, so then they didn't weigh nearly as much, so the 8 and 9 pounds was regular and welcomed. But since the 70s, when they got really, really heavy, they haven't lost that stigma of being super heavy guitars. And, I mean, they are heavy guitars. But I've held Telecaster guitars to Ash bodies, and they were equal to what I feel from Les Pauls. So, and of course, at a lot of times, we're only talking about a half a pound difference, or maybe a pound difference. So, I mean, from like, you're saying, oh, this 8.5 pound guitar, like my Shredder guitar, it may weigh 8 pounds. It is really light. But, I mean, how big of a difference is it really unless you have back problems or shoulder problems? And I have, you know, my back hurts quite a bit anymore, but I blame that on my cubicle lifestyle. And I do have shoulder issues, but the guitar, the weight of the guitar has never been an issue in regards to that. So, you know, I know a lot of people will, and I'm 40 now, so this stuff should be rearing its head about, oh, that guitar's heavy, it's just too heavy to play and stuff, but, you know, I'm not really getting that right now. You know, I'll follow up on that as time goes on, as I age as a guitar player and the weight of guitars if it bugs me. Of course, I'm not playing, like, you know, 3-hour sets like some folks do, but we do have long rehearsals, and I'm not, my shoulder's not really getting tired of it. So, I don't know, maybe we just need to work out. But whenever we're talking about, oh, that guitar is so much heavier, whenever we're talking about a 9 or a 9.5 pound guitar as compared to a 10 or a 10.5 pound guitar, I don't know, it just doesn't seem like that big of a difference. And I hate to say it, but, and I know some folks will be a little offended by this, but man up, for crying out loud. This is rock and roll, right? Well, country or jazz or blues or whatever, but, you know, I don't know. The tone is what really matters, and the feel and all that. I've said many, many a time that you let your ear be the guide. And, you know, if the tone is there, isn't it worth it? I don't know. Maybe it hurts too bad. I don't know. I've never really been someone smart enough to quit when it hurts. So maybe that goes back to when I, you know, played sports with my dad and everything. It's like, hurt tomorrow, kid. You know, yeah, let's play. Let's keep going. And so it's like when I separated my shoulder by my left shoulder for the first time. I was out on the golf course. I was at a driving range, popped it out, and oh man, it hurt like mad. It was like the worst thing ever. And I popped it back in, took a little break, went and washed my face off and my hands, and got a good drink of water and chilled out for about 5-10 minutes, and I went back out there and started swinging the club again. So this is the level of intelligence you're dealing with when you're listening to the guitar podcast, okay? So basically stating, I'm not the brightest guy in the world, so that wasn't probably the best decision for me, but that's where I'm coming from, and it's tough for me to get away from that kind of mentality of, you know, sure it hurts, but keep on trucking through it, right? So, and a weight of a guitar doesn't really bother me, is what I'm getting at. So, there. On to the next topic, really. This is more music in general related, and I was you know, a while back I did some book reviews and movie reviews, music-related movie reviews, and people were talking about, hey, would you recommend some other movies and stuff? And, well, I've started watching the Beatles anthology series, and I watched Disc 1, which is the video 1 and 2, which covers the Beatles from when they were kids and how they got together and how the band changed members from, Pete Best to Ringo Starr and I don't remember the original bass player's name. He was an artist. He was, one of their best friends, and I think he passed away before they really hit it big. But anyway, it covers that until the end of the second episode. The Beatles come to America. So it's really, really cool. I'd highly recommend it to anybody who is a fan of rock and roll history. Beatles fans, of course. Duh. And mainly rock and roll historians. That's kind of a huge thing. A rant. Here comes a rant, folks. It's like when I was watching the Grammys, and heard after the Grammys that some folks didn't know who Paul McCartney was. I can understand some young folks not knowing who Paul McCartney is, but if you're a professional musician and you don't know who Paul McCartney is, for shame, for shame. You know, I can understand how some professional musicians might not know that there was actually a man named Les Paul who was a famous groundbreaking guitar player back in the early and mid part of the 20th century. But Paul McCartney and the Beatles, for real, folks, come on. I'm sorry. You gotta know. So anyway, I digress. Enough of that rant. Something that I found really, really interesting is that before watching this, well, when I rewind a little bit more here, when I was in high school and I was enjoyed listening to the Beatles a lot, I was kind of more of a John fan than any of the other three, and then I guess I would have probably put George number two, and then, of course, Ringo last, because it's stuff that just, I don't know, it seems real childish. I'm sorry. God, love him. He was such a great drummer, and I love watching him play, and love his personality, I'm not a drummer, I can't really speak for on a drummer's level, but I think he did revolutionize the way drums were played in the 60s, I'll just leave it at that. Yeah, I think he was really, really very influential on a lot of drummers going forward. But I just don't really care much for the songs that he wrote for the Beatles, like Yellow Submarine and Octopus's Garden. Not really my thing. It's something that would be nice to play for my four-year-old, but it's not. I just don't dig it. But, as an adult, I kind of changed from being a John fan to a Paul McCartney fan, thinking Paul really had it all. He could sing and write the great love songs. He could sing and write, big screaming rock songs and everything. It's just really awesome. And then after watching the first two episodes, I really see why John was such a huge force in the Beatles. And at that period, he was the band. The other guys are kind of goofing off and stuff. He was the rock. He was the solid man standing out front like, look at me. I am big stuff here. This is the Beatles. We are the Beatles, and we are a force to be reckoned with. And that's how, he sang all this, the love songs, and Shake It Up Baby Now. He's screaming that out, and he could just turn that on. The reason why he had all that... why he screamed that song basically was when they recorded it, it was at the end of several sessions, and his voice was just all kinds of raspy and he couldn't really do anything, and he said, okay, we'll just belt it out in a couple takes, I'm just screaming this, okay? And they're like, okay. So he did. And I thought, well, how is he going to do that live on a regular basis? If he's really conditioned his voice at that point in the studio to pull off that raspy tone in his voice. And then they show him, and it's obvious he's singing live, that it's not exactly the way the recording was in this live concert where he's singing, and he just pulls it off and just turns on that voice, and it's awesome. And so, much respect to the late John Lennon, for all of that. So yeah, at that point for the Beatles, John was the man. I mean, they were all great, but holy crap. So I highly recommend getting that, get it in your Netflix queue or buy it or whatever, man. That's some awesome, awesome stuff. I'm really enjoying it, and oh crap, I didn't put it in the mail today to send it back to get the second disc. Because I can't wait to see the second disc. Really excited to see that. And I guess my one criticism of the DVD is the audio quality is pretty good. I wish they would have spent a little more time in the mastering at the end. Because, see, I'm watching this after my kids have gone to bed. And so I don't want it to get too loud to wake them up. You know, I'd love it to be loud, but I don't want it to get too loud and wake them up. But I want it loud enough so I can hear what's going on and what they're saying and all the music and all the nuances. But the dialogue is not very loud. So I turn that way up. So my TV set at about maybe 20 whenever I am listening to their dialogue. And then they come on and start playing a song, and it's really stinking loud. And I have to turn it down to about maybe 12. So I have to be on top of that over and over and over again. I just like to sit back and enjoy it. Call me lazy or whatever, and I have a clicker, come on. But really, I really wish they would have done that. That's my one complaint about the DVD set, is that I wish they would have mastered the audio better, the levels, so that the songs matched up with the dialogue whenever they're interviewing the guys, you wouldn't have to adjust the volume on your own. That should just be taken care of, right? Am I wrong? I don't know. Maybe I am. Maybe there's a setting on my TV that I know that sometimes they set the audio in a different way and it handles them different, but that is my one complaint about the video set. Highly recommend it. Watch it. Love it. Learn it. See it. I guess something else about the first video in particular is that it really illustrates how much dues that they had to pay to get where they got. Because I mean, they were playing all the time. Something else I found to be very interesting is when I think it was George was talking about, you know, how once the ball got rolling for them and they were moving up the charts and becoming world famous, well, in Europe, I would say, they're becoming very, very famous in Europe, that they all had each other, you know, to relate to and discuss and deal with the emotions of superstardom as they were coming up. Whereas, and he said that they all felt kind of sorry for or felt for Elvis. Sure, he had his band and everything, but it was Elvis. It wasn't the Elvis band or anything like that, and he had a different name or anything like that. It was just him. So the focus, the magnifying glass was on Elvis and not his band. Whereas with the Beatles, the magnifying glass was distributed across all four of them. Of course, John probably had the biggest magnifying glass on him, especially early on, because he was the man. But I found that to be really interesting. And another thing, strategically, was cool that they had several number one hits in England and across Europe, but they didn't have any number one hits in America until 63, and they said they didn't want to go to America until they had a number one hit because they didn't want to play and they didn't want to open up for acts that they didn't respect. And I thought that was kind of telling about what they thought of themselves and their strategic plan for success worldwide. And it obviously paid off for them because by the time they landed, they did have a number one hit. And the biggest challenge for them, it sounds like, was that they needed a big record company to distribute their records in America, and they found little ones here and there that would do it, but it didn't do enough until I think it was Capitol that did that released their record in America and gave them their first number one hit here, and so then there is where it left off. But highly recommend it, check it out, enjoy it, and with that, that pretty much wraps it up for today's episode of the Guitar Podcast. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Comment on the show notes page. If you liked what you heard today and you subscribe using iTunes or soon or whatever, please let them know by writing a review. Thanks again for tuning in. This is Lauren Hunt signing off for the Guitar Podcast.